Welcome to the Everything Action Cast, the official podcast of everythingaction.com.
Hello and welcome to the Everything Action Cast, this podcast for week of November 1st, 2021. I'm your host, Zach, and joining me this week we have Chris.
Hello.
And yeah, we are back. We sort of took off last week. We didn't record a regular podcast, but our Blind Fury commentary went up, so hopefully everyone will check that out and watch some classic Rucker Hauer samurai action with us. But yeah, we are back. We got tons of stuff to talk about, so let's dive right in. And we'll kick things off with some trailers. We actually got the first trailer this week for The Book of Boba Fett, which is the kind of spin-off fill-in that we're getting, because we're not getting Mandalorian Season 3 until next year, but this is the first official spin-off of Mandalorian, and we are following Temuera Morrison as Boba Fett, who, like, triumphantly returned in Season 2 of Mandalorian last year, and then joined by Ming-Na Wen as Fennec Shand, his, like, partner-slash-assassin.
Personal, and then, like, his only friend so far.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so basically we saw at the end, like the kind of after credits scene of Mandalorian Season 2, that Boba Fett went back to Tatooine and killed very large Bib Fortuna. And then, was that Bib Fortuna? I'm trying to think.
I do not know. I just know that guy's been around for a while. Since, like, Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, yes. It was Bib Fortuna who had really let himself go in, like, the years following Return of the Jedi. But he got killed by Boba Fett, and Boba Fett took over Jabba's former palace. Now he's trying to, like, it looks like the show, like, he's trying to build up his own criminal organization and deal with, like,
all the respect. It's like the big thing I've heard in description is it's the godfather of the Star Wars.
Yes. Which I'm fully into. Like that was, like, my favorite thing of, like, like, you know, like the old EU, like just like reading all the weird side stories, like tales from like Mos Eisley's Cantina or like tales from Jabba's Palace, a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I like the fact that the criminal underworld is very complex, and there's a lot of like gangs that aren't just like generic thugs. Like, there's a hierarchy.
Yeah, there's all the different like clans and like there's like Black Sun. Maybe I don't know if they'll show up at some point because they're. They were, like, mentioned in, like, the Han Solo movie, which we have not, I don't think we've heard from them since, but, but that was, like, the whole, like, that was a big EU thing, that was, like, Prince Zizor and all that stuff for Shadows of the Empire, was Black Sun, and...
But he's not in it yet.
No. But oh, man, can you imagine if this was, like, the, like, canon return of Prince Zizor?
Sure, I mean, please, just give me something Shadows of the Empire. Yeah. But then again, we've been holding out that basically we build up to either Dash or Kyle Katarn.
Yeah. I would be interested. I'm curious, I should say, if like Dave Filoni will like, bring any more like Clone Wars / Rebels like characters in live action here as well. Because I mean, we got like Ahsoka and stuff last year in Mandalorian. Since we're dealing with the underworld, I'd love to see like in, like Hondo, like the wacky. Jim Cummings voice smuggler from Clone Wars and Rebels or like Cad Bane, the like Clint Eastwood style like bounty hunter. Which
did Cad Bane become a good guy by the end?
No. I mean he has like a lot of like the bounty hunters, like he has like his own like honor system basically, but like he's not a like he's definitely like I will like I'm gonna complete the job no matter what sort of guy.
Okay.
But it'd be interesting because like in like the Bad Batch, they're like Cad Bane and Fennec have like a big like battle. So like there's like definitely like bad blood between those two.
Okay.
And obviously Dave Filoni is also like one of the showrunners on this, along with like Jon Favreau. Robert Rodriguez is like directing, I think, multiple episodes and is basically like the kind of showrunning it, or like one of the main showrunners, because he directed the Boba Fett episode that like brought him back in The Mandalorian. But yeah, I mean, it looks pretty awesome. It looks like we're gonna get some more like some more cool Temuera Morrison, Boba Fett, action, and just like the building up this criminal organization in the Star Wars world.
I hope somehow they can do its own thing where it's so well told and stuff. It has nothing to do with the next timeline. And that's the part I really don't like, the fact that we're still stuck knowing that it bookends with like whatever like Force Awakens like timeline muckery happens.
Yeah. Well, that's like pretty like this. That's like I think like yeah, the sequel trilogy is like
20 years away.
yeah. So I mean, because this like when's the Mandalorian like it's only like what 5 or 10 years
10?
after 5 or 10 years after Return of the Jedi.
I think maybe.
Yeah, it's definitely not like I don't think it's close to like for the start of like the sequel trilogy. I think it's like it right in the middle between
I know, I know. I
Jedi
just
and like
hope that
yeah.
basically there's an elderly Boba in the, like an even older Boba, like who survives through the madness. But I can also see him go in a blaze of glory in his like spin-off.
You think they'd kill him in the spinoff?
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know.
I could see basically the honor Boba to give him his time in the sun, and then basically kind of give you an answer why he like, where is he in the canon, you know?
I would like to I want to see the who is that? There's that guy that like was like the fake Boba Fett. He would like it was like was he like was it Jast or something? Like
The
there was like
one,
like
what? Who just had the armor?
yeah, like he wore the armor and then like pretended to be like Boba Fett.
Was this in the?
Jester Mereel.
Oh, okay. No, he was a fake Boba Fett. He
Yeah,
wasn't
that's
like.
what I said. Yeah. I'd like to see like that like them dealing with that of like Jester Mereel shows up and just like Boba's just like, what the hell? You pretend to be me?
Yeah, but I think that I'm not sure that was canon, right? That was like a stupid like what, I mean, not stupid if you're a fan of it. I just didn't like it because it was
Yeah.
like more fake Boba Fett stories. Because I thought
Oh wait.
Jasper was like another like
Oh, I think. Oh,
special.
I think it must be a different character. I'm just looking it up now. Like, yeah, I think Jester was like Django's mentor.
Yeah, no, see that's I'm like no, I
Yeah.
thought it was a Jango Fett character.
There was. Yeah, there was like another. I can't remember who it was now, but yeah, there was like some dude. I think he actually had like even like a Tales of the Bounty Hunters like story or something that he was like he had basically the same armor as Boba Fett, and everyone was like he would just like make everyone think that he was Boba Fett, but he wasn't.
So Boba Fett showed up and was like, there can only be one.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, because when you're the most popular Mandalorian, you don't know Mandalorians based on which clan and which sect. So you never see more than like two or three Mandalorians like huddled together. And now that it's like the Mandalorian code is all like whatever it is. I bet
Oh,
you.
I Jodo Cast is the fake Boba Fett guy.
I don't know. I didn't get that far into the Bounty Hunter stories.
Yeah. He basically
But
like he was wearing Mandalorian armor before Boba Fett fell into the Sarlacc pit, but then after Boba Fett fell into the Sarlacc pit, he basically painted Jodo Cast painted his armor to look like Boba Fett, and then he was just like, "Hey, I'm Boba Fett. I'm still here, guys." Like,
like suddenly he's not as good.
yeah.
I bet you they're probably gonna address that like the beef within the Mandalorian clans. Because I bet you, like, another Mandalorian group's gonna be like, we want to be secret. Like, you can't take your helmet
Oh,
off. You
I
can't.
wonder, I wonder if, yeah, I wonder if Boba would get dragged into that, or if he's just like, I'm not gonna deal with any of that shit. I'm just gonna deal with my trying to like build this criminal group. I'm not gonna deal with like this Mandalorian BS. Like, you can deal with that,
Yeah.
whatever the Mandalorian's real name is, Jin the Djarin or whatever.
Well, even like, well.
And like, Bo-Katan, just like let them all deal with it. Like he's.
I can imagine him just be like, none of my business.
Yeah.
Hanging out in this pit for years, trying to be peaceful, sort of. I wonder if they're gonna do like a flashback to just like do his own like
Oh
what's he been
man.
up to?
Oh man, I would love to see him. There's like a flashback to him just like cutting his way, blasting his way out of the Sarlacc or something, or
Eating the way his way out of a Starlight pit.
how the hell he got out of there. Yeah.
I mean, Robot Chicken has a good idea what it was like, and it's like stupid, but again, no official canon, so let's see what happens.
Yeah, so
Maybe
what?
what's his face? That like not IG-88, but like the other guy with the wrap around his head.
Oh, Dengar?
Dengar.
Where's he? Like, I would also that's another thing. I would love to see like some of the other like Bounty Hunter show up, like IGD or like Bosk or
Zuckus,
Forlom.
Oh, wasn't that like Bounty Hunter lady, the one with the long rifle and pale skin?
Oh, Ayla Secura.
I think she died before.
She was in the Clone Wars a bunch because she was working with the young Boba.
Yeah, but like I think she gets killed off like before Return of the Jedi. That's like a story I read. Where she got shot. I remember
I can't remember. I don't think that happened in Clone Wars. It must have been like maybe a book or something. Maybe like one of the new like canon books or comics or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm like, okay. Like there's certain characters that kind of hang around, but based on like how they want to use them, it's like, okay, we gotta like throw one for a shock. Mm-hmm. Throw one out of the story. But you know, I love the idea that basically anyone from the original, or sort of not the original, but anyone between the Clone War to the original to now can have a cameo or sort of like a nod, and it's like, hey, look, it's like, you know, that other bounty hunter guy from some other things. There was like a cyborg that was like chasing Vader around in his own comic series. There's like a half man, half like cyborg guy, and you know, you can have kind of more of canonical nods that, you know, if the Disney wants to springboard later to skip, where it's like, hey, here's this young boy who then we can make a series that takes place after, like, the Force Awakens timeline. That'd be cool.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's named Kyle Katarn. He's five. Okay.
Cool. Shove his timeline just, like, way to, like, way beyond where it actually was.
But yeah, just,
like,
just have the Katarn family there. Be like, ex-Jedis and, like, whatever, and then just slowly do Dark Forces.
Mm-hmm.
Just have them all hide out that they can't be found because they're too young and they're not powerful enough until basically Kyle Loren kind of does his thing, and then the Empire disappears again. And then bring the Pit of Jedis. Mm-hmm. Did you ever play Dark Forces 2?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Where, like, there's that just, like, a hub of, like, Force powers that you can just, like, enter and it just be supercharged.
Mm-hmm.
Just do that. I don't know how it's going to relate to the Book of Boba Fett, but the next book better be Book of Kyle Katarn.
Yeah.
Also, why is it called the Book of Boba Fett?
I don't know. I don't think he's writing a book or anything, but
it's not someone writing a book about him? Because you know how like, there's that theory that the Star Wars is actually like a story that's being told.
Yeah.
Like, so it could be
the journey of the wills or whatever.
Like that's why it's like there's a theory that R2-D2, since he's been around for all timelines, he's the one telling the Star Wars story.
Mm-hmm.
That's why there's so many like in-depth things that basically he's involved, and there's like certain things that like doesn't make sense because it's like he just kind of bridges the gap. So it's like, is he just like, by the way, I have this other story. It's called The Book of Boba Fett I wrote. Like, it's like The Hobbit. You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's The Lord of the Rings, this meta story.
So, so we'll find out what is actually going on in The Book of Boba Fett, if any of this stuff is going to happen or who's going to show up. December 29th is when that starts on Disney Plus. So close out the year. You could spend New Year's Eve and day with Boba Fett. So we also got, I believe it's the first trailer in 2 years since the last one, which was 2 years ago. But we finally got a new trailer for Morbius, the upcoming. What are they calling it? The World of Spider-Man or something? Whatever the official name of the Sony like weird spider the side Spider-Verse. So Morbius is coming out in January next year. I think January 22nd. And then Jared Leto is Morbius, Dr. Michael Morbius, who goes to like South America or something to like and then like does some sort of crazy experiment with bats and then gets vampire bat powers that cures him, but then makes him like drink blood and living vampire.
You figure you're such a. I mean, they kind of explained that it's gonna. It was like a risk. They had to do it because, science. They need to do daring science.
Yeah, he's got some sort of like disease that could like kill him at any time or something, or it's like it's surprising that it hasn't killed him yet or something. So,
but then it's like apparently there's other people with the same disease he has, which is like,
yeah,
ALS? Like, it seems like he has ALS.
Yeah, it seems like some sort of, like degenerative disease or something that he cures. Now he's just, and then he becomes, like ripped, and he has crazy power, like, bat powers, and he turns into a bat creature, and he can fly. Is he flying on, like sound waves or something? Like, that was a kind of weird, like, scene of, like, him, it seems like he sees sound, and then he is flying on, like, the vibrations or something.
Yeah, but it's, like, you need to be in, like, a noisy place, and then you can fly.
Maybe that seems like a weak, kind of a weakness. I guess he's in New York City, so I guess it's always noisy, but...
He can only fly in the city?
Maybe, yeah. He's gonna be like Spider-Man in that scene where, like, he ended up in, like, the golf course. There's nothing to, like, web-sling on, so...
Can someone make some noise so, you know, I can get home?
Yeah.
That's gonna be Morbius. Also, they're doing that thing where they're playing the idea that Morbius could be, like, a villain, but obviously he's not. Like, it's a lot of, like, fake-outs that... I don't know, like, even Venom did that. Like, all he ate was bad guys. He never killed an innocent, but that's, like, Venom's thing. Morbius is supposed to go on instinct, so he can accidentally kill innocent and just be like, oh, shit, I'll do better next time.
Yeah, he's feeding on people, and then he's, like, drawing the attention of, like, the NYPD. Like, Tyrese is, like, after him, and like, Tyrese is a cop, and...
The Fast Five are after him.
Yeah, the Fast and Furious team.
Yeah, that's how you get a crossover.
But then it's also, like, they're also, like, leaning into, like, which I don't know how far they're going to go with it, but, like, they're, like, Michael Keaton's there as Adrian Toomes, so it's, like, how close are we going to get to, like, them, like, acknowledging Spider-Man or, like, beginning, well, like, the MCU? Like,
didn't they sort of acknowledge, like, the Venom storyline because they basically acknowledged the San Francisco incident? And
yeah,
then,
they mentioned San Francisco, and then, like, Morbius makes a Venom joke. Like, so, like, Dr. Morbius is, like, aware of Venom and Eddie Brock.
Yeah.
Enough to, like, make a joke about it.
So, don't know how far this rabbit hole goes.
Yeah. But yeah, it's been delayed, like, at least... half a dozen times, if not more, because of all the pandemic stuff happening. But yeah, finally coming out next year. So you can check that out in January. And then the last trailer this week is that we got another trailer for Moonfall, which is coming in February 4th next year. The latest from Roland Emmerich, his next big disaster movie. Definitely shows a lot more of what's going on, and it kind of, like, probably blows the whole, like, reveal of what, like, kind of, like, reveal.
So much.
It feels the whole, like, basically, like, idea, like, which is, like, the moon is, like, hollow and is secretly, like, some sort of, like, alien installation or like an alien installation, like, inside of the moon. And then, like, there's, like, evil nanobots or something that are, like, causing the moon to, like, go off course and, like, collide with the Earth.
Like it's too weird.
It's basically like like Transformers Dark of the Moon without Transformers. It's just like, hey, the moon is like an alien, like facility that, like, awoken for some reason now, and wants to, like, blow up the Earth.
Yeah, I saw this back when Transformers did it.
Yeah.
It's like, do we not watch Transformers? This is bizarrely, it's like a same nanobot, like, death, like, swarm. And then it's like, inside is the Matrix? I got the Matrix vibe as soon as they enter the base.
Yeah, or like Independence Day or something, where it's just like, we have to go inside the alien mothership, but like... I think there's, like, actually, like, I saw the thing, but I saw the name of it. Like, that structure is actually, like, some sort of, like, scientific structure, I think, or something. It's some sort of, like, but I don't remember what it's called, but... It's some sort of, like, I think it's, like, some sort of, like, quantum physics or, like, some sort of, like,
hollow moon theory.
No, like the actual, like, metal structure, like those, like, interlocking ring thing. That's something.
Gyroscope thing?
Yeah. It has some sort of, I can't remember the name, like, of it, but.
Real science name.
Yeah.
Just, like, gyroscope tube. Or the entrance to, like, Universal Studios.
Yeah. I do think, like, it looks like we might get some interesting disaster stuff from this one, just because Roland Emmerich now he gets to play with, like, gravity, so it's like, because the moon is, like, approaching the Earth, so now all the gravity is fucked up, so that's just, like, people are, like launched off the ground, like, and, like, thrown into the space, or, like, the ocean is, like, flying into the sky and, like, dropping down and stuff. So
Everyone's horoscopes are all messed up now.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully, if nothing else, we'll get some cool, like, disaster sequences.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, disaster porn. I just think, you like you said, revealing too much about the moon was, like, not great for, like, the second trailer? Or was it the first trailer?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they should have just left it as, like, oh, the moon's colliding with the Earth for some reason. Who knows why?
We should go to space, and that's it. Don't show us that the moon is secretly, like, a moon-based, like, comet. And then somehow Donald Sutherland just, like, is aware about moon
science. Yeah, he knows about it. Yeah. Oh, and also, like, did you notice in this trailer, like, there's a guy, because there's social unrest going on or whatever.
He starts and then, like, his own cult.
Yeah, like it's like Kane from Command and Conquer. Like, who the fuck is that guy? Like,
I think he says, like, stay awake or something.
Yeah. But yeah, he's straight up like Kane from Command and Conquer. He's just like this, like. He's gonna like bring like make like the Brotherhood of Dawn or whatever. Like,
yeah, somehow there was enough like convincing because the moon fell, so people took the chance to start a cult.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so anyway, so you can check that out in the February next year. So get ready for that. Get ready for the moon to smash into the Earth and cause a bunch of explosions and roll network disaster nonsense. So, moving on, we got some MCU casting news this week. So, we found out, I think it was a couple weeks ago, or maybe a couple months ago, we learned, I think next year on Disney Plus, there's going to be a, like, MCU Halloween special featuring Werewolf by Night. And we learned this week that Gael Garcia Bernal is playing Werewolf by Night.
So, he's going to be, like, I always confuse him and, like, the other werewolf, John Jameson.
That isn't that Moon Wolf or something, or Man Wolf or something?
It's Man Wolf.
Yeah. And Man Wolf is, like, he has, like, that like, necklace, right? That, like, transforms him, like, the moon necklace or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I think he left space because, like, he got moon space powers because he was on the moon too long.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Werewolf by Night is just like a normal werewolf. Like, he got bit by a werewolf and now he's a werewolf.
I see.
He was in like all those Midnight Suns. Like, he was on that team. Like, he was like hanging out with Moon Knight a ton. So maybe I don't know when Moon Knight's supposed to like debut, but maybe if this is like after Moon Knight, this will tie into like Moon Knight or something.
That'd be cool, just to get this like obscure, like not dark characters, but these like almost universal monster esque characters that Marvel made, get them all in franchise that it's you know, it's like, it's about a werewolf. Like, okay, I kind of know half the story. Like, I don't really need to know why he's a werewolf, but what's he doing as a werewolf?
Yeah.
I wasn't really into that as much because they stop like regular crime, but as a reader, like as a kid reader of these Marvel things, like, I'm just like, I can't relate. Like, yeah, it sucks that the moon makes you a werewolf, or it doesn't. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, there's the whole like Legion of Monsters, like that was like they had like because like Dracula's straight up a character in the Marvel universe, like because Blade fights him all the time. So, and then I think there's a version of Frankenstein too, like Frankenstein's monster is like in that like in the Marvel universe.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if basically we just get a Frankenstein movie, and then we get like a Dracula movie. Then probably it's just Morpheus 2.
Dracula. Oh, actually. Actually, the original Legion of Monsters team was Ghost Rider, Man-Thing, Morbius, and Werewolf by Night.
They call it, like, a League of Monsters.
Yeah. And then there's a second team that was Werewolf by Night, Frankencastle, so, like, the, like, Frankenstein Punisher. Manphibian, Man-Thing, and Khonsu, the Living Mummy, and Satana. Satana Hellstrom, so one of the Hellstrom siblings.
The Hellstroms were part of the Ghost Rider group, I think, right? Like, they were like a...
Yeah.
Family?
They're like, yeah, I think they're like Midnight Suns adjacent or something. But, yes, so I think they're going to start shooting this Werewolf by Night special, or whatever this Halloween special is, early next year, and then they'll be obviously coming out in October sometime on Disney Plus next year. So get ready for that. Get ready for some more crazy Marvel Disney Plus shows. Hopefully, maybe I'm this hasn't even filmed yet, so we're not gonna get anything from this. But hopefully, maybe because Disney Plus Day I think is next Friday. So maybe we'll get some trailers for like other, maybe we'll get like finally see like Moon Knight or She-Hulk or Miss Marvel or any of those upcoming shows. If we do, we'll report back. Well, it won't be on next week's show because we recorded before Friday, but maybe the week after that we'll have news about MCU shows on Disney Plus. But moving on, we got some news about there's another kind of Nintendo Mario movie in the works. So we're getting the Illumination Super Mario Brothers movie, which will have obviously Chris Pratt voicing Mario, and Charlie Day as Luigi. And then the big casting news when that whole like crazy casting thing came out was that Seth Rogen is going to voice Donkey Kong. And so so the Super Mario Brothers movie isn't even out yet, but we're already kind of like there's already a Donkey Kong solo movie in development. They'll like follow. I'm assuming it'll follow Donkey Kong and all the other. Yeah, it's gonna spin off of this Mario Brothers movie. Illumination is making this Donkey Kong movie as well. And yeah, just some sort of like Donkey Kong adventure in the jungle. Hopefully, maybe we'll get like King Krool and everyone else in there.
Do you want to mention also the weird other thing that they're doing with Chris Pratt?
Well, that's our next story, Chris. So
I was gonna relate that. Be like, why not throw that character in this movie too? Sure.
Garfield. Yeah. So Garfield into the Nintendo world. Yeah. Chris Pratt is voicing Garfield as well. So that also came out this week, which that's such bizarre. Like, does not fit Garfield at all. Like, Chris Pratt's just way too like hyper and like.
He's too much of a bro sounding guy that you don't want.
Yeah.
You don't want Garfield sounding like a bro. You want him to be kind of like this. Well, I was thinking nonchalant.
I was thinking Chris Pratt, but like just go to another like Parks and Rec person. Like Nick Offerman would probably be a good Garfield.
Nick Offerman would sound awesome.
Yeah.
Like he'd be like stern, but you kind of lower it so it's not too like, you know, gym shop teacher guy.
Yeah.
You give him like a really like laid back tone, and you're right. That's a way better casting choice in my opinion.
Yeah, so I mean, the last big Garfield was Bill Murray, obviously.
Mm-hmm. And which is okay.
Yeah.
It sounded all right if you grew up with the Garfield TV show.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like Chris Pratt's going to sound like Chris Pratt for everything he's in. He's just like, why is Emmett as Mario?
Yeah, as Garfield.
Yeah, as Garfield now. It's just like now it's confusing people with franchises. Granted, I think Mario has a better global appeal. Garfield is like it's like every year it's like less and less fans.
So I think Sony Pictures is developing that the Garfield movie. No release date, no other details, basically just Chris Pratt is voicing Garfield.
Hey, here's a Garfield movie no one asked for.
Yeah, Garfield's so hot right now. If it was a Garfield without Garfield or a Garfield minus Garfield movie, then you have my attention. We're just like existential dread of John just like talking to himself and going nuts.
Oh, you ever saw that TV show like Willow or
the one with like Elijah Wood?
Yeah. That's basically Garfield without Garfield, the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was really, really good. Like, the more I think about it, because it was very bold and it's just supposed to be like just you know, the silly idea that they didn't think would get that far, but well written and with a message. Garfield, though, it's like, are we doing the thing where, like, the human world doesn't know Garfield's talking to them? It's like, you know, that theory that basically, like, Garfield is just, like, a real cat. Like, do you believe that Garfield's smart enough to talk to John? Or do you think that John is hallucinating Garfield for half the things? Or Garfield is like this behind John's back?
I always thought we were always just like hearing Garfield's thoughts. Like, he wasn't like saying anything out loud. So it would always just be like what he's thinking, and then John would never hear it because he's not like talking out loud, or maybe
right,
he can't talk. Like,
that's the comic version, because that's
yeah,
like more sense. But the live action movies, after the first live action movie was okay in theory, because basically Garfield's like smart, but doesn't really let John know he's that smart. Like, he's got his own agenda. I mean, he'll try to hint, but it's never to some degree. Mm-hmm. Then the second and third movie, out the goddamn window. Like, that theory is blown out, and now Garfield has a twin. You know, like, he's going cross country. This cat went across the Atlantic.
Yeah, there's like a royal Garfield cat.
So, you know, there's a whole limits of what they're doing.
Yeah.
And at that point, I checked out. Like, I've only ever seen the second movie or the third.
I didn't even know there was a third one.
I don't remember. You see what I mean? Like, it's one of those, like, I thought there was only two,
because there was Garfield, and it was Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties. That was the second one. And then
I don't think it was the third one. I think it's the same animation studio that, like, made the Chipmunks movies.
Oh, there's a CG one, an animated one, which, that Bill Murray was the voice of? What? Garfield 3, Paris Most Wanted?
See what I mean? It's just like, I guess?
Oh, that might just be someone like making something up. I'm just like pitching it. Like, this is my idea for a third Garfield movie. I think there's only officially two live action ones.
So, you know what's weird? I just looked at it real quick to see who owned the rights to all this. So CBS, Viacom, CBS,
mm-hmm.
Disney. And then 20th Century Fox.
Well, Fox made the Bill Murray movies, and I think they're on Disney Plus actually right now, or they were on Disney Plus, and they kind of like faded it out of Disney Plus.
And then right now it seems like
Sony's making this new one, so Sony must have purchased the rights, or like bought, like got the like rights to Garfield.
A fun fact, here's a last Garfield tip Garfield thing before we change subjects and we talk about this for hours. Garfield didn't start as Garfield. It started as John.
Yes, yes.
And then it went
to Garfield. Garfield is basically the Urkel of Garfield. Because Family Matters was supposed to be like the story about this family, and then Urkel took it over. And then, like the original idea for the strip was like, oh, it's going to be like John and his like adventures, and like he just happened to have a cat called Garfield.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And then it's like it mutated to this whole different story, and God bless it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a show called Garfield Origins, or Garfield Originals, in France, and jeez.
There was a bunch of like crazy. I think it was like the 80s. There was a bunch of like TV specials, like Garfield, His Nine Lives, where it was like different like the animation styles and like different like it was like Caveman Garfield and
There was the noir one
or like where he's like a like it's like Bullets and Babes or something, where he's just like a.
There's 10 single Garfield like movies they made from 1982 to 1991, and they're like four of them won Emmys.
Yeah. Yeah, one was like he was like a hard-boiled like detective.
Dude, and then there was a Garfield a restaurant in Dubai.
Oh my God.
And then it was based.
If that restaurant sold anything except lasagna, then they've
They
failed as a
sold, they served
concept.
lasagna, garfield shaped pizza, garfuccinos, which was just, you know,
Garfuccinos.
and garfield shaped dark chocolate bars.
Oh
There
God.
was a second location in Toronto. And then it says, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, I think the Toronto one closed. Yeah, the Toronto one closed, but the one in Dubai is still like kicking. So you just heard about this now, and you just have like, I don't know, 4 grand to burn. Dubai is the place for your most Garfield-esque thing ever.
Yeah.
And go there and visit and wait until this movie comes out.
But yeah, so Garfield's happening, Donkey Kong is happening. For going back to Donkey Kong for a second, like they gotta bring like Diddy and like Dixie and everyone else in, right? Because
Oh, yeah, it can't just be a Donkey Kong by itself movie. Like, just what's it gonna do?
I mean, Fred Armisen's already voicing Cranky Kong in the Mario movie, so we already have Cranky. So I'm sure they'll probably bring everyone in. I'm sure Funky, someone will play Funky, like Matthew McConaughey, or someone will be Funky and who's like, is it Trixie or whatever, like his girlfriend or whatever.
Thought that was like Dixie.
Dixie or Trixie, I think. Yeah, like I remember she would like th you'd go to her to like save that in, like the Donkey Kong Country games.
You see, the problem is like I only know more Donkey Kong stuff through like the TV show.
Oh man.
So is that gonna be canon, or is this gonna be like, I feel like it's gonna be a whole reboot, right? Like, just none of
Yeah.
that's gonna carry over.
And you gotta have King Krool as
Yeah,
the villain.
you
Like
need a
it's
villain.
he's gotta like yeah, it's like Duncan's gotta fight King Krool, and like I would be down for kind of like a like straight up like just like Donkey Kong Country like adaptation, like just like them going through like different places to like fight King Krool and get the bananas back.
I'm fine with that. That's a good plot.
But yeah, so I mean, but obviously this will be after the Super Mario Bros. Movie, which I believe that is in the fall of next year. So this is probably at least like a 2024 or something probably movie. But yeah, Illumination is also working on it, so I'm sure as soon as they finish working on Mario Bros., they're gonna start cranking out this Donkey Kong movie. So last bit of news for this week is that we got some potentially forward momentum on Boondock Saints 3. So apparently Troy Duffy has announced that he is getting Norman Reedus and Sean Patrick Flanery back for a third entry in the Boondock Saints franchise.
Cool.
There's
Been 12
that.
years in the making? Four?
He's got a new production company behind him, I believe, like Impossible Dream Entertainment, that like also produced like Get Out and BlacKkKlansman, and they're working on a script. It's like someone's he's got a guy working on a script for him, and yeah. So I don't think there's any really plot details. I think they said like they want to make it more like John Wick, global, like the McManus brothers are gonna like go across, like travel across the globe or something, fighting crime now or something.
Huh. Not sure I feel about that. Because I think like it's pretty fun that they like are lucky to do what they do. Like, they're not great professionally. Like, they'll go up and mess people up, but they're fighting like mob guys and kind of guys that don't take them serious. But if you make them like a John Wick, oh, they take on like an Assassin's Guild, I don't know. Like, it's just a different tone. That's the thing about John Wick. Like, he fights a lot of like assassin guys or like hard to kill people. Not
I mean, if they want to like copy the action style of John Wick,
okay,
then
yeah, I could see
yes.
that.
But yeah, but yeah, like sending them across like the world and like coming up with some sort of like crazy like conspiracy like some sort of conspiracy like group of like, oh, you guys were the saints? There's a whole network of saints. It's like the secret group of it's the network of saints, like.
Yeah, you've inspired other people to rise up, and there's an evil sect.
Yeah.
I don't know. I could see. I'm kind of happy that there's more Boondock Saints stuff. It's just a little like time has passed so much that I don't know how this fits in without it being like a comedy anymore. Like, you're trying to be serious, like, please don't.
Yeah, it's been it's been 12 years since Boondock Saints 2. And then, do you remember they were trying to like make make some sort of TV show? And then there's a whole crazy like crowdfunding thing that they were trying to do. I think we're like,
I remember, we almost donated to it just so, like, a drink with like Patrick Duffy at like some like bar. It was like some really weird low tier steak.
Yeah, it was like, was it like $1,000 and you got like hang out on St. Patrick's Day with Troy Duffy? It's like some sort of Boston like bar or something.
Yeah,
you
know, like, it was something suspicious that I was like, is this real?
And then they're like, I think one of the tiers was like, oh, you'll get like a metal case with like the DVDs of the season when season one in like a special like collector's metal case when it comes out. Like, it's like, well, the show's you haven't even like filmed 1 second of the show and you're already selling like a collector's edition of the DVD set. Like,
yeah, that's why I was like, Troy Duffy, I don't think you don't do business right, but I mean, apparently he does if he's back with a third attempt.
It doesn't seem like this one is being like crowdsourced right there. They actually have like a normal like financing and like producers and stuff. So it's like, it's not gonna be some sort of crazy like, scam or like Kickstarter. Like, I need $10 million in Kickstarter to make Boondock Saints 3 or whatever. So
I don't think it was even that. I think it was like $2 million. Like,
yeah,
it's still a lot of money. Don't get me wrong, but it was something crazy. We're like, I think Troy's gonna ask for more money. Like, just say it up front, so don't just like, can you imagine if you actually won that competition or would not even like won that and you get there and Troy's like, but you have to buy me beer. Like, wait, what?
Yeah, I said you could hang out with me and like, I didn't say we're like, it's not all expenses paid, like we're just hanging out, I'm here, like buy me some shots.
I know, I'll tell you more about Boondock Saints 3 that I'm like, okay,
yeah,
I'll do this, man. I have more money and like, oh, I had this awesome idea for the first movie. Like, thanks, Troy.
Mm-hmm. So we'll definitely keep an eye out for more Boondock Saints news as it comes up. I mean, we watched the first one for a commentary for St. Patrick's Day one year, so you know, we're in the Boondocks world. So we'll definitely keep an eye out for whatever happens with this third one, if it ever happens.
Yeah,
so
we're fans. By the way, the only problem is that we just like don't understand how the marketing works.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's it for news this week. So why don't we jump into show and tell? And Chris, did you see anything in the last week or so here?
I saw The Evil Dead, like the first one. It was just so on
the original, like original Sam Raimi one.
Yeah, I saw it on TV. Like, it was just playing on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen it in a while, and it's really slow. Like, when's the last time you saw The Evil Dead, like the original?
Man, it's been a while, probably.
It ages like an art student film now, so you gotta appreciate it more for the creative choices and the practical effects.
Yeah, because you can basically watch two, and two is pretty much almost the exact same story. Like, two is basically a remake of one.
The first, so like 20 minutes, or even less, is like all of one.
Yeah. So you watch two in Army of Darkness again, then the show would get like the whole, like you get the whole story. And you kind of like skip one if you like. I mean, it's definitely interesting to go back to, but like, yeah, if stars like. What like more like fun movies? I think that like two in Army of Darkness is definitely like more fun than the first one.
Yeah, the first one definitely has a pacing issue, but it's very suspenseful for the concepts.
Well, yeah, the first one is definitely more serious and like straight, more of a straight up horror movie.
Halfway at the end, it just falls apart. Like it falls, like the tone shifts between shock and horror and comedy. Because it's just at that point you're watching like Bruce Campbell just being like terrorized, but it's not like they didn't perfect it yet. So definitely like an early draft of it. Like, he definitely gets better with time. But you forget, like, He's not a good fighter in that movie. All he does is just like throw people around and then just scream. Like it's not like action Ash yet. So, which is it's why I kind of forgot, like Evil Dead 2, just like he is ready to go. And again, the Evil Dead, or is it just called Evil Dead? I always get forget if it's called the Evil Dead or just Evil Dead, but either way, it's
I
okay.
think well, I think the first one's the Evil Dead, the
Yeah.
remake, like the reboot, remake, sequel, whatever that like the Faye Alvarez one is Evil Dead,
Okay.
and then the show is Ash versus Evil Dead.
So the Evil Dead definitely is just more appreciated for like a old school horror nerd. Definitely like a time capsule. Not so great to throw someone in the franchise because I definitely think you should watch two and then like Army of Darkness. One is like, okay, you really want to see how it's made, like where it all began. But yeah, it's definitely like a movie that just like it. I if it didn't get critical acclaim and if it wasn't the first of its kind trying to blend that horror comedy. It just looks like a like it really does look like a art like a art project that if they didn't make it funny it would just been like oh that's a nice cool effect, blood effect but like not so much that you want to keep watch it's not entertaining you know in the sense where it's like oh I could throw that on the background just like no like either you're in evil into watching it or you're not you gotta be in the real mood for Evil Dead but other than that like. Didn't really watch much. I think like it was just marathoning like the Evil Dead 2, so I caught some of that.
They're doing like a whole like series like marathon or something.
Yeah. HBO were like one of the movie channels and the hotel was in was just like having that. But basically just like Halloween weekend night, so a great time to watch those kind of movies. Again, to preface it, those movies great go great for this season. If it's Christmas time, why are you watching the Evil Dead?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about it for me. What about you, Zach?
So I for Halloween I got actually right just in time from my Netflix disc service, but I got Sinister, the 2012 movie, which I never saw the whole thing before last weekend. I
Oh,
did when I
you've
was
never seen the whole thing?
well I so I, when I worked at the movie theater, I would like it was playing when I worked there, so I'd always see like the end, like I would always see like the last like 5 minutes because you had like waiting for like to clean the theater, so like you just like I saw like the last like 5 minutes of the movie like probably like a dozen times or like a night or something or like 3 or 4 times a night, so I knew the ending before like seeing the whole thing, but I didn't actually sit down and watch the whole thing before. But yeah, it's definitely good. There's definitely some goofy parts. I think we've kind of like all kind of just like made Bagul like less serious because like with all the comparisons like Michael Jackson like just like all the like there's like memes and stuff like it's just like he's kind of goofy now.
I like the what he, the influence he has
I
over
do.
people.
I do like the he's not really you don't really see him that much in Sinister like it, you just, it's more of like his presence is felt because and it just
Yeah.
like he's like shows up in pictures he shows like just like he'll pop up for a second but it's more about like because it's like spoilers for Sinister is like he's like making like kids murder their families for him and then they join him in like his weird movie world or whatever he like wherever he lives in like he lives in pictures. Whether it's like a fresca in Greece or like a movie.
I don't know if you have to burn all of like his portals to kill him or whatever. It's never really explained, but
Yeah.
I do like that Ethan Hunt really becomes that like alcoholic like investigator dad.
Ethan Hawke.
Ethan Hawke, sorry.
Yeah.
Just kind of like, oh hey, I'm doing some like almost like what a podcast like true crime person would be.
Yeah, I feel like I don't know if like the true crime boom, but I feel like this like preceded the true crime boom.
Oh yeah, it was before.
Because like Ethan Hawke is like a book writer. I feel like if someone like if he made Sinister like this year, like he would definitely be like a podcaster. He'd be like a serial like podcaster. Like I gotta record this for my new podcast.
He kind of does that. He doesn't record his like thoughts.
Kinda like I feel like that's like a cliche of like writers, like he's recording his thoughts, but like, I don't think he does that too often. He just makes like his stereotypical like conspiracy board of like the strings everywhere.
Yeah. But I thought he did record
and then calling like a very haggard looking Vincent D'Onofrio.
Vincent D'Onofrio was like always the go-to, like, hey, you're doing some creepy shit, like call me, I'll be in your movie where you I'm the specialist for something.
I feel like they like it's literally like Skype footage. I feel like they just literally called Vincent D'Onofrio on Skype and just like, hey, you want to be in our movie? Like, well, Ethan will call you on Skype and we'll just, like film the screen. Like, he's like, all right, sure. I'll talk about Bagagool or whatever his name is.
I still don't understand. Like, I mean, did you watch the sequel yet?
Yeah, I haven't seen the sequel though.
So the sequel part, I mean, not to spoil much, it's like, yeah, every time that people call him, he always warns them, like, yeah, don't do this, and they never take him serious.
Yeah.
Like the more you poke Bagul, the more Bagul like gets stronger.
Yeah. I will say, like, I mean, definitely like the actual like the home movies are like legitimately creepy and like super well done. Like if you show someone like this, like, hey, here's like just like out of context, like you could like make it seem like, oh yeah, this is a snuff film. We just found a snuff film. Like,
yeah, I appreciate that. Like that part was pretty well more memorable than, I don't know, Bagul's like pop out scares. Jump scares that I'm like, all right.
I don't know what, like, I'm glad we got, I feel like we've, I think we've gotten away from this kind of like, but it was like this like early 2010s like era of like, cause this one has like a jump scare end where it's like Bagul just like pops out of this, like, just like,
yes, like, I forgot that in the attic that just like,
yeah, I think goes, like Krampus did that. Like, I feel like there's like a bunch of movies where it's just like, they do like the, it's like the, like just a stupid like jump scare at the end. It's like, Bagaboo, I'm cool. Like, see you later.
I saw this movie with Joe, and he definitely did the like at the end.
But yeah, it's just like such a stupid, like, why, like, what is the point of this? What is the point of this stupid last jump scare? I'm just like Bagul popping off the side of the screen, just being like, bye everybody, I'm Bagul.
Thanks for seeing my movie. Because it's meta. I guess it's supposed to prove that Bagul, now that you've seen Bagul, he's gonna follow you home.
Yeah. But yeah, Sinister's good. Like, definitely check it out if you've never seen it. It's got like a lot of some very creepy stuff in it. Like, and then along with some goofy stuff. But I think it's definitely like well made and then Scott Derrickson went on to make Doctor Strange. So.
Oh really?
Yeah, this is I think this is the movie he directed right before Doctor Strange.
Wow. I mean, good. It's not a bad movie. I just feel like it gets very cliche at certain points, but then it picks up when they do the home videos and then they do the like the slow build up. They do a good job of the like, haha, you thought you got Bagul, but Bagul's got you.
Yeah, I do also like, I like, they do such like so much with just like the like, because it almost never leaves that the one house. Like, you're always in the house with Ethan Hawke for like the entire movie, and they still do a whole bunch of like weird creepy stuff. Just mostly those home through the movie, like the Super 8 movies, but like just like him like wandering in the house and like other things, weird stuff happening around this house. but it's a very solid like one location movie, because it's just like, We're just in the murder house.
Yeah, I mean, is there no one? He was in that place by choice. The market was pretty good back then when the movie takes place. It's not like, you know, the housing crisis happened. This is the only place to live.
Apparently, he always moved, like, well, because he had a book, like, Ethan Hawke's character had a book that was, like, popular in, like, a bunch of years ago, and then he made like two other books that were like not as popular. And he's like trying to chase the dragon of like, I gotta capture the magic of that first book. We gotta move into an actual house where an actual murder took place now to like fuel my writing. Like,
yeah, but it's like, this is definitely like a lot of red flags. He's just like, it was so cheap to live here, even though like a triple murder happened here.
Yeah. It's for my art. I have to do this for my art.
Now, as someone who's like trying to find housing and stuff, and how you see the market, I'm like, yeah, not worth it. Mm-hmm. I'm trying not to get bagooled.
But yeah, so I saw that, and then I saw, I went to the theater, and I saw Last Night in Soho, which is the new Edgar Wright movie.
Hmm.
Which did not do great in theaters. I was like one of the few people who saw it. Like, it made like less than $5 million opening weekend. I think that other like horror movie Antlers beat it, and it was like nowhere near like anything else. Like, it was
Antlers
like,
beat it.
I think like the Scott Cooper like horror movie Antlers like just barely beat this one.
Yeah, because I'm like, Antlers is like, if you didn't know Guillermo del Toro was in it, you know involved. Well,
he produced it. I don't think he had much to do, but I think it definitely had like, I'm definitely interested in seeing that one at some point, but like. Yeah, I think I think the creature in that one is like a very like Guillermo del Toro style creature. I think that's probably why he like was like, yeah, I'll produce that movie. Like, it's fine. But yeah, so Last Night in Soho, it's Edgar Wright. Definitely a departure from like his previous movies. Like, it doesn't like, it's definitely not as funny, or not really funny at all. I mean, just a couple of funny bits in it, but like, it's mostly just like a straight like, it's like a psychological horror movie. And definitely not as like kinetic as far as like the editing. Like pretty much every movie before this, like Scott Pilgrim or the Cornetto trilogy or Baby Driver, it's like he's always like known for like that like super fast editing, usually for like humorous it's like it adds like the humor of like the editing, but sometimes just like make it look cool or like to like go along with the music. But yeah, this one's definitely more. This one still has like a ton of like, it just oozes style, but it's not like the normal like Edgar Wright like quick cut style. It's more like he's like doing like, it reminded me a lot more a lot of like a Nicholas Winding Refn movie, like if like Only God Forgives or something, where it's like that kind of like look,
like it's Neon Demon.
Neon Demon only God Forgives, like it's just like drenched in like neon, drenched in like different, like every shot is like filmed in like artificial, like it's either like blue or red or purple or stuff like that. And it also has like, it definitely has some sort of like some like Tarantino like what he did for like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, like just like the like meticulous recreation of like the 60s, like, because mm-hmm. that's like also on display here, because basically the plot is that you have Thomas and Mackenzie, she's this girl named Ellie, and she wants to be a fashion designer, so she gets into like a fashion school in London, and she moves to the West End in London. But then she grew up in the country, and she is obsessed with the 60s. Like, her grandmother imbued like this like love of like 60s music and 60s fashion and style into her. So when she gets to school, like she's like kind of like uncomfortable on like her like more like modern.
Oh, okay.
Modern like roommates, like modern like all the other kids. And like the dorm stuff.
So. Why'd you sound like she's been like isolated in this like wooden cabin just to watch like the Beatles?
Well, yeah, she lived in like this like small like village in like England. So, but then now she's in like the like big city of London. So, there's sort of like a culture shock of like the first night she's in like, she's at college, her roommate's a mean girl who like is like, like just like a jackass to her, and then they go out and they like go out to like the pubs, and like she's trying to sleep, and they're like cranking, like they're having a party and cranking like techno music and stuff, so she's just like totally just like not on board. She totally clashes with every other person in the dorm, so she goes and finds like this like apartment or like this room at this like much older like house that's like much more like her style, like the 60s decorations. It's like very like old like 60s house basically. But then when she's in that room, she starts, every time she goes to sleep, she like has like these like visions of, or like it seems like it's a vision, but also it's like happening to her, where it's like she's actually like time traveling back to like the 60s. and she's seeing like this like inspiring singer Sandy, who's played by Anya Taylor-Joy, and so Ellie is like seeing like this like the story of like Sandy play out, which I think one of my main like complaints or nitpicks is that like they don't really get like the rules of like the time travel slash visions are kind of muddy, because the first time she like experiences the 60s, they do like a bunch of different things where it's like she's like either like she's in a reflection of mirrors, so it's like she's observing things, but then at some certain point she's actually inhabiting the body of Sandy and Anya Joy.
Wait, so she's doing like a John Malkovich?
It's weird because like it's like some of the time she's literally in the body of like Sandy, but the other time she's like just like a invisible observer of everything. And then they only do it this one time, but it's the day after she has that first vision, she has, because like it kind of ends with like Anya Taylor-Joy like Matt Smith like making out, and then like Thomasin McKenzie wakes up and she has like a hickey on her neck, so it's like she actually like has like physical like signs that she was like actually there. But then they don't really like get into that again. So they kind of like drop that. So it's I don't know if the trailer is kind of like threw off expectations like what I expected it to be. I was kind of expecting it to like be more of like that, like the timeline start merging, or like Thomasin McKenzie would like start influencing things that happened in the past, or like change the past or something.
Oh, kind of like frequency.
Yeah, or something where they merge the timelines, or like something they start like affecting each other. But it's mainly just like she starts having visions of like ghosts and in the past, and the visions start getting darker, and then she like kind of sees like there's like the like Anya Taylor-Joy's character goes through this like descent into like she doesn't get to be the singer she wanted to be. She gets like she has a much, much darker path in the past.
He doesn't do any of this, right? So you're saying that basically that's what have made the movie better, but basically that doesn't happen.
Well, if they had more effect on each other, it would have been better, or like that's what I expected to happen. Mm-hmm. But it's mainly just like the vision, like Ellie's vision start getting darker, and she starts seeing these ghosts appearing. She starts seeing things when she's not like sleeping. Things start popping up when she's not sleeping. She sees like visions of things, and then she starts seeing that Sandy's like story gets like darker, where like she like isn't a singer. She has like she eventually like becomes like a prostitute basically, and then it starts getting like, and Matt Smith is her pimp, and so it gets like dark, because at first like the first couple of visions she has in the 60s, like Ellie is like, oh man, this is awesome. And she kind of goes like single white female, where she like models herself after Sandy. Like she dyes her hair blonde and like cuts her hair like how Sandy's hair looks, and like dresses like her and stuff.
Okay.
But then she starts seeing how dark things got, and she's like, oh, I'm not, this is horrible. I'm not inspired by this anymore. Like, but then she starts seeing like ghosts, and like it gets crazier as it goes on. So, yeah, definitely like super stylish. Like it's definitely worth watching just to see like the style of it, because it's like Edgar Wright just like pumps so much style into it. I would say, like, if I had to rank it, I would probably rank it last of the Edgar Wright movies. But I mean, it's like you're ranking against some of the like the best like comedies, and like it's like here's like six steaks, which steak is the least delicious. Like,
they're all good. They're just like, yeah, not the top.
One has to be the worst, or like what has to be the least your least favorite. So. Yeah, I mean, Last Night in Soho is not a bad movie by any stretch. I would just say it's my least favorite Edgar Wright movie, because I definitely prefer his more like fun, kinetic, comedic style, like Hot Fuzz or Shaun of the Dead or Scott Pilgrim or something.
Okay, I mean, it's opinionated, when it comes to like favorite director films, and then.
It's definitely interesting that like he can like switch to like this other kind of style and tone and stuff, and I would definitely like. I wonder if he could like fuse like the like kinetic style of like the earlier like his earlier movies with like some sort of like more serious horror, or like some other genre movie.
Okay. Yeah, this is the first horror movie.
Yeah, it's definitely a straight up horror movie. There's not like it's not like a horror comedy. It's like it's a psychological thriller horror movie, which is also a pretty huge change of pace from like Edgar Wright's stuff, where it's usually like super fun and wacky and especially like the Cornetto trilogy, like making fun of like a genre or something. Oh, I will say the sound, like pretty much every Edgar Wright movie, like the soundtrack is like 100% on point. Like it's just filled with like just awesome 60s songs. So if you're like if you want to just hear some like great 60s songs as well, like definitely check it out as well. I think even like the title is from like is a 60s song that's like in the movie. So I saw that, and the last thing I saw is that I got a screener of Shockwave 2, which is apparently was one of the biggest movies of last year. It's like a huge like Hong Kong Asian action blockbuster. Like it's like I think it was like the 10th highest grossing movie worldwide of last year. But it finally came out on demand this week. And it stars Andy Lau. You know, like Hong Kong legend Andy Lau, who's been in so much stuff, like Infernal Affairs, and was like, what was the one? It was like
Great Wall.
He's in Great Wall. I'm trying to think. He wasn't in Crouching Tiger, but he was in like another Crouching Tiger like esque movie.
House of Flying Dragon. House of Flying Dragon.
Yes, he was in that. And he's been in a bunch. He's been in a bunch of like recently. He's been really like leaning into like police action thriller stuff.
He's been doing a lot of that.
There's
so many other movies that I can't name off the top of my head.
Yeah, but yeah. So Shockwave 2, it is a sequel to Shockwave, but apparently I haven't seen Shockwave. Apparently it has nothing to do with Shockwave. Like it's a totally new character. Even though like it's the same. It's like bomb defusal thriller. Like it's like the same like plot ideas or like tone, like a occupation, I guess, for the character. He's not the same character in Shockwave as he was for Shockwave 2. Totally different character, totally different like plot and everything.
I mean, it's a spiritual sequel, I guess.
Yeah. It definitely has like a 24 or like that kind of vibe where it's like this like there's like a terrorist attack impending, and like he's like a he kind of like ends up on the run because he's like wrongfully accused. Maybe wrongfully accused of causing like this like bomb to go off this hotel. I will say like one of the craziest like maybe like funnest thing about this movie is that like every 20 or 30 minutes like it just totally changes up like what you're like it just reveals this there's a huge reveal where like it changes like your total perception of what was going on before.
Oh, they're like, doing like a Guy Ritchie thing.
Yeah, well, so spoilers to start off with, like, so there's a point where like. So basically, like Andy Lau is this bomb defusal expert, and he gets caught. Like there's a pretty awesome opening like bomb defusal scene where it's almost like a Saw trap, where it's like these two people are like trapped on like these like on opposite sides of a wall, and they're on like pressure pads and there's like synchronized bombs. So there's this whole like awesome crazy like bomb defusal scene, but then there's a secret bomb that they didn't see. So then Andy Lau gets caught in the blast and like loses his leg. So then he's trying to train and like get back to be like a field officer like bomb defusal guy, and the police higher ups are like, no, you can't, you're disabled now, you can't be a field officer. So he gets mad, and basically cuts like 5 years later, and then like he's like you see him like delivering this bomb to a hotel, and then like he's like in this big like chasing with the police, and then he ends up in another blast. Or like kind of like, but doesn't lose a limb. He doesn't lose any limbs this time, but like he gets amnesia. So he doesn't remember who he is. He doesn't remember who he is or why he's planning this bomb or like what he was doing. So then it basically becomes like the fugitive, where he's like on the run from the police. But then they keep doing these reveals like what he was doing or like what is like
goal was
because like so they start out and it's like, oh, you were undercover, and you were trying to like infiltrate this terrorist group. And then like 20-30 minutes later, it's like, no, you were actually a terrorist. And then you're like, we implanted fake fake memories into your brain that make you think you were an undercover police officer, but you're not. You're like, you quit the police and like went crazy, and now you're like, and you were actually a terrorist.
Oh my god.
And then there's like two more twists after that. So it's like,
you're actually in a simulation.
Yeah. Not quite that crazy, but like it's just like I'm just like, what is this movie gonna do next? Like they've done like three crazy plot twists. There's like it's like we're like an hour into this movie, just an hour left.
Well, they did say that you know, this is a high grossing movie, so they crammed like four different movie plots into it, from what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
It's like bomb disposal, that could be its own movie. Amnesia movie, that could be its own thing.
Oh yeah, the whole amnesia fugitive thing could have been a whole. I mean, it could have been like the fugitive, like he could have been on the run from the police the entire time, trying to like figure out who he is, like what try to stop this terrorist plot. But then it's like a mini like 20-minute segment of the movie, and then it gets into this whole other like terrorist group plot thing. It's more like 24 or something. And yeah, it all builds like a whole crazy climax with like nuclear bombs and stuff. Oh, I will say this movie also starts out with like something I don't think I've ever seen like a Western movie or like any other movie ever, where it's like they show this like nuclear bomb going off, but then they're like, oh, don't worry, our hero stopped this, so this didn't happen. It's like, what? It's like you start your movie, they show, it's like this crazy like nuclear bomb goes off, and it's just like, oh, this is what would happen if this is the bad ending of the movie.
What?
Like, we're gonna show you the good ending. Like,
oh, this is it, they're showing the bomb thing, like this is what happens if he wasn't there.
Yes, pretty much. It's like this is what would happen. This is what would happen if our hero had not been there. So now let's get into the actual movie. So it's like, what? I've never seen that. I don't think I've ever seen that in a movie.
That's
where, like,
weird.
Where it's
I know. It's like, oh, this is something that didn't happen. Like,
yeah, this won't happen. Don't worry. It was like too, like they This movie definitely does not like shy away from like it's pretty brutal at times. Like Andy, like when you see like Andy Lau's leg blown off, they literally show it's like it's just like this like bloody like bone sticking out stump, and then like that like opening like nuclear blast, like they show people just like getting like fucking disintegrated, like skin melting
Terminator,
off, like, skeleton, Terminator style, just like they're like disintegrating and stuff. So I was like, whoa, okay, we're going there.
That's cool.
Yeah,
not messing around.
There's definitely some if you've seen other like kind of like Hong Kong Chinese like recent blockbusters, there's definitely some like super dramatic scenes. They're like super over the top dramatic. But I think, I mean, Andy Lau was so great that he like makes them work. So, but yeah, there's definitely some like some like super like dramatic beats at times, like funerals and like it's not quite like. I think there is probably some like propaganda in it, although I mean, it's stuff coming from Hong Kong, like not quite. I think stuff from Hong Kong is not quite as like nationalistic as like straight up like Chinese. Like it's not like Wolf Boy or something.
They don't do as much hardcore propaganda. Like kind of like do this, the unite, but there is a little bit of like unitedism of like.
Yes, well, that's definitely in there because like there's toward the end when like the like They're trying to stop like the nuke from going off. There's like this whole like montage of like one of
like
the
world coming together.
Well, it's like they like go through like the whole like Hong Kong like radiation like nuclear bomb plan of just like call the media and send out warnings. Call the Department of Nuclear Energy and get them ready to like contain the blast. Call the Hong Kong. they go through like the entire like here's Hong Kong's plan in case a nuclear bomb goes off. And they just go through like every single like organization and like government group that's like involved in like the nuclear bomb going off.
I feel like they shouldn't do that. Like, you know, it's nice. They should throw some movie magic, not just like, oh, anyway, this is how we would have done it if Hong Kong got nuked.
Yeah. Call the Office of Public Safety and tell people to get to shelters. Call the media. Call the police.
Call the tuna factory so we need preservatives to eat.
Yeah.
I get it, but it just seems weird where it's like probably it was too detailed and too like professional where it's like, are they bragging that they have a nuclear response team?
Yeah. I don't know. It's definitely it's solid. It's a fun like if you're looking for like a 24 style like action thriller, and also something like different than like something you'd get from like, you know, like an American action movie. Like I'd say definitely check it out if you want to see something like that. And yeah, and Andy Lau is awesome. He's the Asian Tom Cruise, according to PR. So
he's like in his 60s and is like still able to like make good movies.
I'm assuming they did like some sort of like green screen like CG out his leg in this movie, because he has a prosthesis leg, but like it's like I don't think Andy Lau actually has like a fake leg.
He does not.
Yeah, so they do something. They do some crazy like CG, like green screen, like he must have wore like a green like sock thing or something. Yeah, but there's some crazy like there's a chase where he's like escaping from the hospital, where his character doesn't have his like a leg, so it's like yet like or like he like he needs to find a leg to like put on, but like he's doing these like crazy like parkour stuff with like, and like he's like doing this, he's like hopping around one leg but then like jumping down staircases and stuff, which is like, it's just like, I don't know how they did this or like what, like this is like just crazy like action like stunt stuff where it's like Andy Lau had to act, he like jumped down stairways while like acting like he was like missing part of it, like one leg, so it's just like, and it's like it, you buy it like 100% where it's just like, wow, he like, is Andy Lau actually missing a leg? Like
that's pretty good.
Yeah. So yeah, it's definitely cool if you want to check it out. It's like, yeah, if you want to see like a big Hong Kong modern blockbuster. So yeah, so that's what I've been checking out this week. So we can wrap things up. Definitely have a site. You can still listen to our Blind Fury commentary. It's up there right now. You can watch along to that Rucker Hour Classic with us. And all the regular features are up there every week as well. So head over and check all that stuff out. And yeah, so for Chris, I am Zach, and we will see you next week.
For more Everything Action, head to www.everythingaction.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at EVAction, on Facebook by searching for Everything Action, and follow us on Instagram at everything.action. You can also subscribe and get more episodes on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.